Welcome back to the Kind of Funny screencast. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes, and I'm joined by the big doc, Kevin Coelho.
I'm so sweaty. It's gross.
What a way to start a Monday.
I know, but it's the first thought I have. Look at all this.
Why?
Sweat.
What do you want?
I just walked like a mile and a half with Cecil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. That does give a little
decent reason. Decent reason.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. As long as it wasn't a mystery. Mystery sweats. Never
It's not like a cold sweat or anything like that. No.
Okay.
Yeah. I unfortunately do have the cold sweats because an angel has fallen. After 3 years, I finally got the vid, and it does not feel good, everybody. So I'm going to be limited on content. The next couple days, it sucks. It was really bad during the weekend, but it's getting a lot better now. But I wanted to be here with
what was. I applaud your bravery, Tim.
Thank you.
But what was that one really shitty series with Gerard Butler? Something has fallen. Like we could have angels.
Oh, yeah,
fallen.
Yeah. London. Angels fallen was the last one.
Oh really?
Yeah. Because he was the
no
angel.
Way.
Yeah. Because he's the guardian angel or whatever.
Oh wow. Damn. That's never cool. Mind. There goes my $1 million movie idea.
I heard those movies are really entertaining. By the way, I've never seen any of them.
Fallen in review. You know, maybe one day.
Make one more. Make one more.
What do you think about that, Nitro Rifle Andy Cortez?
I don't feel too great about it, honestly. But I'll tell you what I do feel great about: House of the Dragon.
House feel of really the great about Dragon, it. A show that I will never get the name correct. I feel so bad every time I talk about this. Every single time I say Game of Thrones, Rings of Power. And you know what, guys? I'm sorry. I'm trying my best out here. The comments are getting after me, and it's a well-deserved getting after. I don't know how I keep fucking it up. It's all right in front of me, but whatever. You know what? This is the Kind of Funny screencast. Each and every week, we get together to talk about the latest in TV, movies, and trailers. And what's really cool about that is right now, we're doing a whole bunch of them. We're doing She-Hulk. We're doing Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, Hot D, and Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power. Every single week right here on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. If you prefer podcasts, search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny Screencast and we'll be right there for you. If you wanted to get the show ad-free and watch it live as it's being recorded, patreon.com/kindoffunny is where you want to be, just like our Patreon producers, Fargo Brady and Molecule. We appreciate all of you so very, very much. Today, we're brought to you by ExpressVPN and Chime, but I'll tell you about that later. I want to get right into this amazing, amazing, momentous event that is Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, episode
Hot
2.
D.
Hot D, baby. Andy Cortez, what'd you think about this episode?
Loved it. Absolutely love it. And it's getting to that point for me already. We're just two episodes in, and I have such faith in it because I am really interested in the overall politics of what's happening in the world. And even if they deliver me, even if the next episode delivers kind of a clunker of an episode, maybe not a whole lot happens, maybe it's a bit boring, I'm still really interested in the overall, like, here's what's happening with the Capitol, or here's what's happening with the Red Keep. The Red Keep. Here's what's happening with this crabby guy. Like, holy shit, what's happening with that dude? I just think they're introducing all of these really interesting elements that even if they do, you know, episode 3, it's kind of boring, kind of lame, I'm still stoked about what's happening in the overall world. And I think having those small, subtle conversation moments between two characters that, you know, this, it just kind of shows you and shows me exactly what I've loved about Game of Thrones all along, is that I don't need crazy action. Like, as long as there's good drama between multiple sides or factions, people with their own interests, people sort of vying for certain angles, all of that stuff I think is just super interesting. And I think the way that they frame it, it makes it even more interesting.
Kev Doc.
Yeah, I think that there were a couple moments in this where I was like on the edge of my seat and I was like, ah, damn, this is the magic that I've been missing in my life. Like the first one is when, Rhaenyra. Rhaenyra, close. Lands with her dragon and breaks up the little skirmish that is like kind of is about to happen or maybe isn't, and like totally shows that her plan works and that he tosses the egg at her. That moment, I was like, oh, like she's gonna be a cool leader. I'm very curious.
You're stepping
to see.
Out of line, but this is awesome.
Yeah, but like also keeping people from stepping out of line, like putting them back in order. And then later when the king is like, oh, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna choose this woman as my wife, and it's like, ah, this kid's an idiot. We got an idiot in the room.
Yeah, but like, he's gonna die soon. Yeah.
But I was like, damn. That's like, again, I'm here for this like politics and like the gossip behind it. And like, then of course it cuts to, you know, the dude with the white hair. Well, it's a lot of dudes Damon. Like that, but no, the
seahorse.
Yes. Sitting there talking to someone. And I was like, he's talking to Damon. Paula, he's going to be talking to Damon. He's planning some shit. We might have a new king someday. I don't know.
It's
and
up.
Sure
it's
enough, so it pans exciting. Over, and I'm like, yeah. So I think what I'm trying to say is it's great so far, but I don't want 8 seasons of this. Do it like tight 3 or maybe tight 4 seasons. Get it all knocked out. You know what I mean?
Well, don't they already said welcome. Season 2 is happening, Kevin. So you got to on board for at least 2.
No, I mean, but they have a plan with this, right? Like this series is done. Like, hopefully, they have a plan for the seasons going forward. And I just hope they don't get lost in the momentum and they just make something epic.
Tim, what did you think?
Guys, it's back, baby. Like, we said it last week, but it didn't truly hit me until we got the fucking intro. And we did.
Yeah.
We fucking did. Last week, we were talking about it. And I think it was Nick was saying that, like, you know, he wants this to stand alone. And I didn't feel that in my heart. I was like, no, I miss it and I want it. And we fucking got it. And we fucking got it exactly how I would have wanted it, which is a brand new image, a brand new vision, super damn cool effects and stuff. But the same old song. I love the commitment to it because to me it shows that they're like, this is Game of Thrones. This is not just a spinoff. This is us continuing our marquee franchise. And this is must watch. This is not optional. And you see that level of care throughout the entire episode. And what I love about this episode in particular is it took everything from episode 1, all of the setup, and ran with it in a perfect pace where we end somewhere that feels earned but also not dragged out. I really like that. One of my favorite things about Game of Thrones is the chess game that they play. Sometimes they play checkers, right? Sometimes we see it in like more of season 7, season 8. It's kind of, you know, we're kind of moving through this a little too quickly. I feel like this is kind of like speed chess, where it's kind of the things we want, but it's moving really fast. It's moving really well. A little Queen's Gambit action for you, bless. Okay. But what I really appreciated about it is that it feels like the vibe of the early seasons of Game of Thrones in terms of focusing on a handful of characters, a lot of them, but a handful of characters in deeper ways than kind of just spreading it all over the place. But it has the look and production value of the later seasons. And they're throwing it in, obviously, with the dragons being just one thing. It took us so many seasons to even get them in the first one. But for them to have that standoff at Dragonstone with that bridge, with the dragon breaking the clouds coming up, and the two dragons, that epic shot we get, the straight up fucking like Godzilla Kong shit. Like, I was blown away, man. The visuals of this show are so impressive. And again, it goes back to, it's not just cool CG stuff. It's like set design, it is real costumes, it is so much love and care put into the way that people look is supposed to back up who they are and who their family is. And it's just like, man, they have really built such a world that they have earned the ability to throw 10 million new names at us, and we can still kind of be like, all right, I'm not sure I'll ever know that guy's name, but you gave me Seahorse. So I know Seahorse, and that's him, and I know his story, and I can tell you everything ships. Going on. But it's like, I love that, though. It's like, as complicated as the things can be, they do a good job of making us understand how things relate to each other as much as we actually need to know, while also simultaneously being incredibly deep and lore-heavy for the people that can somehow keep up with all the names and all of that stuff. I am very, very impressed with this show so far, and I love the way I had a little bit of worry last episode where and just a little bit, but I was like, the original show was so great because we had these dueling families, and the Game of Thrones really was about the multiple families kind of dealing with the world of Westeros. If we're just dealing with the Targaryens and those close to them, is that going to be enough? And I love that 2 episodes in, we have a civil war. like two episodes in, we have defined factions. We have right and wrong, but not on one side or the other. It's like each side kind of has a little bit of it going on. There is like intrigue within each camp. I fucking am totally obsessed with this.
And amongst all of that sort of civil war stuff that there's, you know, that they've been hinting to for quite a while for the last, you know, 2 hours or so, and they're going to push further and further into those areas. All the while, there's a greater looming threat of this crab guy who's feeding people to crabs, and that imagery is absolutely horrifying. And we get a glimpse of the dude, and I don't know what the fuck's going on here. Like, it's some sort of serial killer level shit that has me really terrified for exactly where the show is going to go, and I'm worried for the people that are going to try to oppose this dude. But I love that all of that stuff is just sort of, you know, we heard about it in episode one. He feeds people to crabs, and he puts crabs down their mouth or whatever, and that's kind of like a scary thing to just conceptualize. And episode two, we're getting this drip feed. We're getting more and more hints at it, and we finally get imagery near the end of the episode. And yes, I'm super excited for exactly what's happening back in the home of the Targaryens and dealing with this is very, very confusing. Not Valyrian, but Valerion. Very, very confusing.
Why did they do that?
The politics happening there almost make you somewhat sick to your stomach. And then thinking about, I mean, you see it on the king right now, looking at this 12-year-old walking next to him, just thinking like, fuck, this is awful. I don't like this. This is terrible. And you think that's gross. And then you see a fucking just dudes with half of their bodies missing and crabs all over them. Like, I just love that they're introducing more and more elements that I think are going to become bigger and bigger things to worry about in the future, in the next several episodes. And hopefully it's an arc that kind of is able to withstand under its own weight and not necessarily have to have, I guess, other elements that they deal with. I hope that we get enough of this crab dude, because I'm just so fascinated by what the hell they're introducing here.
See, I don't want too much more of this crab dude. I hope that he plays. Well, I mean, it's just like, I liked all the characters that we've met. I don't think that we need to like have like this main villain this whole season. Like, I'd love for them to just like, cause it like the preview makes it look like, all right, Damon's gonna go in there, maybe fight little man like hand to hand. Little crab man. Fight like hand to hand, and then eventually his dragon's gonna come in and clean up. And it's like, I hope that that happens and builds kind of like what the seahorse is trying to build, which is like, we can make you look like a good and like fun, like, not fun, but like helpful leader.
Worthy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So I'm hopeful that it starts building that arc so that we start building these factions.
Like, Damon, look what Damon did. He stopped this man, and look how fucking scary this guy is. Like, yeah, this guy's got a weird mask on. I just saw images of him like in full costume on IMDb that I guess are just promotional shots from the show. And this dude is just terrifying looking, like very like weirdly. I don't know if it's like if it's a burn sort of victim thing, or maybe he himself got bit by a bunch of crabs and now he wants to become the crab man. Is this a Bruce Wayne thing where he's scared of bats and now he's going to inflict that fear upon others?
You don't think it looks
like... See, when I was watching it, I was a little confused because of the similarities between the names Valerian and Valerion or whatever it is.
Yeah, Valerian and Valerion.
When we first were seeing the crab guy before, like, we saw like the reveal at the end and we saw like kind of he was a little fucked up, I thought it was the grayscale stuff that
is it not? Yeah, that's...
Oh, is it? So maybe, yeah, that's the thing. Because like that, remember there was that whole plot in the first show where Valeria, when people
this
go
didn't
there.
Look like scales growing, though.
So there is on IMDb, there's a screenshot of that last scene with like, I think less effects on. Do you guys want to see that?
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on.
Is it just the image of the dude in the costume?
Because
I don't think that's from the last shot.
No,
I think it's from a future episode.
No, I think it's the it looks like it's the shot where he's looking up. You can just see his mask way more clearly in this.
Yeah, and at first I didn't know it was a mask or not. Like until I ended up.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, until we saw a later glimpse of it, and in the hockey ranking.
sorry.
Yeah, this is not from the show. This is not from last night. We didn't get a close enough glimpse of that last night.
Never mind.
Okay, interesting.
So, either way, terrifying looking. Yeah.
Yeah. The scene that Kevin was talking about with the pan around of having Seahorse guy talk to somebody. I love it because they did the whole like slow reveal thing. And I feel like in shows recently, it's like, all right, what fan service legacy characters returning here? Like, who could it be? But I love that this show is like, no, it's like, it's a character that is from this show that we know that makes absolute sense to get this type of reveal and to be here in this moment treated this way, right? And the conversation that they had back and forth there, I thought was really interesting in terms of what Andy's saying of the crab guy potentially being a bigger plot element throughout the season, where they're talking about the Driftwood throne. And I love the idea that there is this other throne and there is this other kingdom that we haven't even heard of, and we've heard of so many already. And one of my favorite things of Game of Thrones is how it introduced us to the families and to the game at hand. And then it was like, oh, there's also magic, and then there's also giants, and then there's also this. And like every couple seasons, they'd introduce this like new element that felt so different than the rest of the things in the world. But then eventually we're like, oh yeah, that absolutely adds into everything, and they weaved it all together well. And I like that. Everything they're talking about so far with this crab guy, it's like, oh, I buy that this is part of the Westeros that we know, and I'm really interested in it. Thank you for this, Andy. Thank you.
Yeah, it is backwards. Flip it.
But yeah, there you go. No, yeah. So the black dude with the dreads is Corlys Velaryon, and Valyrian is what we know of, like the Valyrian steel and that sort of.
Valyria.
Old Valyria. Yeah.
Yeah,
man, it looks really weird spelled backwards on my screen.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Yes, it does. Before we continue on, let me tell you about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like checking in your baggage at the airport without a lock. You don't know who's looking through all your stuff, finding all of your Nintendo Switches, your PlayStation Vitas, or all the other things that you're hiding in there. When you go online without a VPN, internet service providers, ISPs, can see every single website you visit. They can legally sell this information without your consent. Nobody wants that. That sounds like a bad time for everybody. You can browse more anonymously. It's easy to use and it works on all devices. I love ExpressVPN. It is super simple to use. I feel safe across all of my devices, knowing that whether I'm on my desktop or my mobile phone, people aren't getting in there. I'm safe on the internet, and what I look at, what I browse, that's mine. That's for me to know. Secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/kindoffunny today. That's expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. Next up, shout out to Chime. Like a cool breeze, Chime is a refreshing way to handle your money. There's no monthly fees, no maintenance fees, and no minimum balance fees. So it's how banking should be done. And when you need access to your money, you can do so fee-free at more than 60,000 in-network ATMs at many locations like most Walgreens or 7-Elevens. You can also send money to anyone, even if they aren't on Chime. Fee-free for you and no cash out fees for them. Chime, no monthly fees. No vibe killing fees. Sign up for a Chime checking account. It only takes 2 minutes and it doesn't affect your credit score. You can get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by a debit card issued by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank NA. Members FDIC. Out of network ATM withdrawal fees apply, except at MoneyPass ATM in a 7-Eleven location and at all Allpoint or Visa Plus Alliance ATM. Other fees such as third-party and cash deposit fees may apply. Chime.com/KFGames. Go for it, Andy.
Now, the thing that I'm still kind of the thing I'm concerned about mostly right now is how do we keep these threads going without them kind of losing steam? And do we have enough characters at play right now? Because I did feel like in Game of Thrones, one thing that kind of got you really hooked initially and really interested in all of the back and forths and all these relationships is that they had what felt like six or seven different sides kind of vying for their own, you know, path to the top. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they want the Iron Throne, but sometimes it just means that we want to make a bigger name for ourselves. But right now we're dealing with Viserys Targaryen, who's the king. And we know that he made a decision that doesn't really necessarily seem to be the most popular. And it doesn't seem like this is going to be the... like, Viserys essentially took, like, less money to go with the team he wanted to play for, as opposed to like, taking the big contract from the Dodgers or whatever. And he decided, like, I'm going to do what's in my best interest. I'm going to make Alicent my queen. I'm going to marry Alicent.
I mean,
and we know that Corlys Velaryon, that you're seeing right here on the screen, Corlys Velaryon, that fucks up his whole plan. And right now, like, when I talk about the different sides, it's like, to me, I see Viserys, I see Corlys' side, Velaryon, and I think maybe the other side is Daemon's side. And everybody else are just sort of little elements on
there's also the lizard
each of those
side.
Sides. The what?
The lizard. Rizifon. The hand.
Oh. The Otto. Lizard. I was like, is that his Game of Thrones nickname? Like the hound, the mountain, the lizard?
Got it. I also was really confused on why you were calling him the lizard. Yeah, I mean, he's on a side that's winning right now, right? Like, he's now, like, his heirs will be probably kings. So, yeah, it sounds like three factions that we're going to be talking about, right? Because it's Otto, and right now he has the king on his team because Alicent is getting married, even though we heard the king say Rhaenyra, thank you. Rhaenyra will still be king or queen if she, if he has a kid, right? Which I doubt. And then the other side is Daemon felt like he should be the rightful king, right? So there's these three pillars that we have built out, and it seems like, yeah, after Corlys was denied that marriage with the 12-year-old. He maybe is now moving over to Daemon. Maybe he'll marry a 12-year-old. We'll see.
And are we concerned at all about the queen who never was, or the queen
Such
who never
cool.
will
well,
be, or whatever?
I mean, she's married to Corlys, right?
Yeah.
So because of that, like, it seems like she's given up on, like, being queen, but wants her descendants to be, like, continue having the royal line. And that's why I think that that she's going to side with Daemon, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I think that initial...
I think the Daemon squad is about to keep growing up.
I was just going to say, like, I love that in that conversation between her and Rhaenyra, and just like, hey, all these different sides are vying for the throne and vying for their own self-interests. Mm-hmm. But like, at the end of the day, we're having to deal with this patriarchy that... No matter what we do, like, I love that line where Rhaenyra is like, well, when I'm queen, I will, you know, I'll
rules,
blow
yeah.
all this shit up and we'll start sort of
Break
a new
the
structure.
Wheel.
And yeah. and I just love that you're seeing an older version of herself. Like, she's just looking at an older version of herself, Rhaenyra is, and seeing, like, no, this person's kind of, like, here to keep you in check and make you realize, like, no, things are going to stay the same for a long time, and you're going to constantly be beat down no matter what, because you're a woman in this world, and you are thought you're lesser than all of the males. You're lesser than all of these strong father figures that are going to keep on doing this, keep with the status quo, you know?
I do think that, like, the aunt is meant to be like, oh, this is what it looks like to, like, fail and just not be given everything, where Rhaenyra, like, she, like, we already see she's going out and making things happen. She's like, this is a good plan of action. We should take the dragons over there as a show of force and tell Daemon, like, give us back the egg and stop being an idiot. And he's like, no, we can't do that. Go pick a knight. And then she goes and does it, and it works. So I think that, like, she has more, like, sense of, like, I need to make things happen.
Yeah. And what's interesting too is from the trailers, we know that there's a time jump, and we also know that he got the stab from that there was that wound that he had.
Yeah,
so I wonder if like if he's gonna die at some point, uh-huh. and like him like die from not being killed, but die just from stupid ass reasons, yeah. like almost like a Baratheon type thing.
They said rot. Yeah,
yeah.
And I wonder if that's gonna be the kind of plot of, you know, him telling Rhaenyra, like, even if I have a kid, like, you're still going to be queen. But then it's like, well, if he's dead, that word means nothing anyways. And so then I wonder if that's going to turn into the turmoil.
That's not necessarily true. Like, a king does get to choose a successor. Like, that's how he became king, right? His grandfather had no living heirs and chose between the aunt and him. So, like, if he, like, right now, she is in line to be king. So if he has kids and then it dies without switching the succession, I'm pretty sure she is still next in line to be the king.
There's just again, we're only in episode two, but
I know it's fine. It's good.
But just the amount of intrigue there is, where you don't. There's certain sections of these relationships that you can easily forget about, because we've seen these conversations that Corlys has, and like him and his wife kind of courting him and being like, hey, what about our daughter? You know, like, we'll keep that Valyria, that blood strong, whatever, pure Valyrian blood, you know. And then we see the decisions finally made and he selects Alicent, and you're like, damn, Corlys ain't going to be happy about that. And then you remember that Rhaenyra and Alicent seem to somewhat have like a little bit of relationship happening there, right? Like, I feel like there was a tiny bit of romance there in the beginning of that of those Absolutely. Episodes.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's like an element that I can easily forget about, because I am so focused on the bigger relationships with Corlys, and because that sort of felt like the big anchor for this episode. And then the camera turns to Rhaenyra and you're like, oh my god, she's gonna be pissed about this too. Like, holy shit, we just saw a relationship. We just saw a conversation, rather, between Viserys and his daughter Rhaenyra, and them kind of being like, all right, let's talk about this. We need to kind of come clean. And, you know, we haven't had the best relationship. We've had some issues. Mm. We understand that mom died, and we haven't talked about it a whole lot. And yeah, we're going to have to redo this. And she's like, you know what? I understand, father. I understand that's the way things have to be. And you think that everything's all bright and chippy, and then fucking Viserys has to like say that he's gonna make this girl his queen. Like, holy shit, dude! It's just adding another. I don't know. I think it's just part of like the that gossip, the chisme, which is like what Mexicans call it. Mm. It's all the chisme. I just love sort of all the little bullshit happening behind the scenes.
Dude, it's so good. That scene between her and her dad, I thought, was really powerful and really good for both of their characters, where they're fleshed out, and it's like they don't only do good or bad things. There is always kind of like a middle ground, and you can see with Viserys, the intent is right? Like, he's not trying to do weird shit or be a bad guy. I also like that it doesn't seem like he is like in love with this girl, right? Which I think was a potential thread that they would go down, and maybe it starts to go that way eventually. And I don't necessarily even think that would be the worst thing if he falls in love with her legitimately, because
wait, you're
they
talking about
hang out. Yeah.
Oh, I really think that like he is in love with her. I think that's why he's choosing her. Like, strategically, it doesn't make any sense for him to choose Alicent to get married to. I think this is she grew on him, because they've been hanging out for 6 months, maybe
6 months.
Maybe even longer, because like we don't know how long this episode, you know, takes place, how much time.
Well,
I get the vibe that it's building, but it's not quite there yet. But like the building blocks are there, and yeah, she is his confidant. Uh-huh. Like, she is there with him, talking to him, and like he enjoys the talks and all that stuff. And I think that started as him seeing her as his daughter's friend, and like now it's obviously it's turning into something more. But I feel like I feel like him making this choice started as him thinking it's the right choice for his daughter. But
I didn't see that. Yeah.
We got to cancel him, dude. Yeah. He's too young. We got to cancel him.
Oh, I mean,
it's so fucked up. I had all this kind of spoiled for me, by the way, because it was a TikTok that somebody used the audio of from Rick and Morty, where she's like, look at your dad. Look at him collecting those things. Like your dad, you know, bees. I want to fuck your dad. Right? And like somebody like said that this was Viserys and Allison. And I was like, God damn it. I had that spoiled for me. But yeah, I do think that he looks at her as kind of like. It turned I think it's turning from the best of this bad situation to. You seem like the most sensible choice. Even though, like, I don't know. I don't think this character even looks at the age as an issue. I don't, like...
I mean, they definitely didn't back then. Like,
yeah.
You know, they would want to take a younger wife so that, like, they could have a bunch of attempts at kids, right?
Oh, my gosh. I'm just having, like, flashbacks to that moment of him walking down the garden with Corlys's daughter.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, when they cut to her and, like, how young she looks, I just, like... Just had that visceral, like, oh, God, dude, he does not want to be here. This sucks so bad. Dude,
and it was like, what? Oh, so your dad told you to say that. What'd your mom tell you? And she's like, that you won't bed me until I'm, like, 14. And it's like, oh, dear God.
Just 2 years. Just two years from where she's at. God, yeah, this is, like, such a random tangent, but that scene of them walking in that garden where she, with the white hair next to him, so small, did it remind you of Code Geass? The later season,
yeah, that definitely.
VV guy walking with it. I was like, this looks exactly like it. So funny,
100%.
But going back to what I was saying about the Allison and the relationship between the dad and Rhaenyra, like the buildup between Rhaenyra and her dad and that conversation they had leading directly into him choosing Allison as his wife. That being kind of the end of the episode, Rhaenyra, what?
Rhaenyra, the daughter, right?
Yes. What'd I say?
Rhaenyris.
Oh. So going back to the conversation that Rhaenyra and Allison were having with the candles around them, like that whole scene to me was like so tense and good because it's like you see Allison is starting to play the game. Like she's not innocent anymore. Like she is in it and she is starting to play her friend. And I was like, damn, this is that Game of Thrones shit, baby. Yeah. I love it.
Now, did we have any sequences between Alicent and Otto that in this episode, like, I recall in episode one, conversation that they had.
There was a scene where he was like, go and hang out with him tonight. And that's she's right, like, I'll do what my dad wants.
Oh, man. This show, dude.
It's like, good. It's good. They got
it. They think of all sorts of different ways to kind of, again, I think the best thing about Game of Thrones is everybody's a bad guy until they're not. And sure, they can still remain villains, but getting time with them, suddenly you start to empathize a bit more with them, even though you know that they still may be the villain. And I think that's just a testament of good character building. Like that's what we fell in love with. And that's what I fell in love with in Game of Thrones. And to kind of continue that. Now, the one thing I am worried about is whatever this time jump's going to be. I'm curious about it. I don't know if I love it without seeing it yet. Like, I think if, I guess we have to see it and see exactly what it does to these characters and what the purpose of it is for. But I am kind of worried about it and how it may. I just don't know what to think of it yet. You know, I know that it's coming. I see the casting. I see what these characters look like in the future. And I don't know if it's something that I'm super into of seeing them like dealing with the future and how quickly do we get rid of or how quickly are we running by these earlier issues? Like, does it seem like these earlier encounters with certain political enemies or whatever, does it seem like those might fade away and now we're dealing with new issues in the future? Are those going to be long-standing issues? Like, I don't know. I'm just kind of at that point where it feels like all of this may just be the smaller drama and we may be getting into some bigger stuff in the future.
Mm. I think that's really interesting. I feel like the end of the first episode... We watched that little directorial talk, and they were talking about it like it was going to be happening way more frequently, but it's starting to feel like there is going to be one big jump at some point. I don't think we're going to go back ever. And that makes me curious for, like, further seasons of, like, are we just going to jump to them being older and then just stay there forever?
Now,
go ahead.
I don't know how accurate IMDb is, but it looks like
it's not.
The younger and older versions of them are on for a lot of episodes.
I think that they just default as 10, like all the full season, because they don't know until afterwards.
Well, because one of the characters is not defaulted as 10. That's the only reason why I'm saying that.
Like, it could, well, maybe is that a dead character?
So no, one of the characters is older Alicent, saying that she's only on for 8.
Interesting. And we do know, I mean, it seems like it's going to start in the next episode from the little teaser.
So I just don't know if I like the initial thought of it. Like, what are you all thinking could be, like, what do you all think the purpose of it is for? And do you think it's a good idea or not? Because I do feel like maybe I'm going to get a little less interested in what's happening right now, because it doesn't seem like, maybe it doesn't service a bigger part of the story.
I mean, without knowing much, I imagine that and this is totally a guess. I imagine the time jump is like, hey, from the trailer, it looks like Alicent is pregnant, and maybe do we have like the death of her father or something, where it's like suddenly her role becomes more pivotal and important.
Yeah, I imagine. I don't know much. Like, legitimately, most of what I'm basing this off is the little teaser we got last night, and then the one shot in the first trailer where we saw Olivia Cooke, who's the girl from Ready Player One and Thoroughbreds, who is the older Alicent, where she's running with the dagger from the original series that killed the Night King.
Well, that's her dad.
Yeah, exactly. Which we even saw last episode, right? And she doesn't look much older than Alicent, not too much. So I imagine the time jump's not going to be like 10 years or something. I think it might just be like 2 or 3 or something like that. And I think that potentially that could kind of help things, where we don't need to see a lot of the goings on the next couple of years, because they are just kind of like building up, because we see Dragonstone, right? And like, we see where Dragonstone's at, and it's super cool to see it compared to how it was in the last couple seasons, though. We're so beaten down and shitty, and here it's like kind of dope and like filled out a lot more.
That massive long shot, Tim, where they're just tiny specks walking. What a good shot.
It was great. That was. And I kind of feel like they might use the time jump to get through a lot of the stuff that we don't need to see. The seahorse building an army, we don't need to see all this stuff. It's kind of like, we get it. They're going to do that stuff. And now it's more like, let's get to the political intrigue of the factions and how they're actually going to play against each other, as opposed to just a lot more of this, like, Damon's just off here building something and they all know he is, you know. But we'll see. I have faith. I have faith so far that they're going to give us something that's worthwhile.
One more thing to throw in. Shout out to Sonoya Mizuno, who plays Mizaria. Sonoya Mizuno is from she's from the a movie with Oscar Isaac with the robot Ex Machina. And she's also in Devs, which was one of my favorite TV shows that came out in 2020, the start of the pandemic. Watch Devs on Hulu. She's fantastic in it. But all of that little back and forth that happened on Dragonstone between her and Damon, I think is so damn interesting, because not only from a lore perspective, like, I think we heard a bit of that in Game of Thrones when they talked about putting the egg next to the baby like that creates this bond. That's such like a cool concept to me.
Yeah.
But the idea the idea that people think that she's pregnant already, right? And that
he lied.
Yeah, and exactly. Like the fact that she's throwing all that shit out there, or he's throwing all that shit out there, and he gets back to her and she's like, why are you saying all this shit? And don't you think that, like, yeah, when they come for you, when they come to burn all this place down, they're not going to kill you, but what about, like, the whore wife? What are they going to do to me? I don't know. That's just another element they're throwing out there, is like, something to keep your eye on, something to worry about in the future.
And I love it, because, you know, we have the knowledge of the last 8 seasons of this show. And it's like, we know the way that whores are treated. We know the way that whores can rise to power and kind of become like, have power enough to manipulate situations to cause real fucking damage. Like, remember the whole Tyrion situation with his dad and all that. Like, that got messy, right? And so when you look at this
he's an understated way to put it.
totally but I love it. I love that they're immediately jumping into it, where we get this girl that in episode one is she's a whore in the brothel, and then episode two she's coming in with the dopest outfit I've seen on the show yet, with this damn dress with the cutout shoulders. I'm like, fuck yeah, dude, you look awesome. And it's like, I love that the show can, like, it plays with the power scales in a really interesting way. And I was saying this earlier, but like, the costume design backs up where the characters are supposed to be so well, and you have this understanding of their power. And like, you see Damon with his fucking ridiculous ass dragon armor and shit, and it's just like, yeah, you get who this guy is, you get the vibe. And that conversation that he has with her, then it's just, I love that no matter how badass he looks, I feel like she's kind of, she just wearing the costume has more power, having the confidence to talk to him and be like, you're fucking lying, and I'm the one that's going to get hurt from this. It's like, I love that. I love that, like, we're thrown into that type of upgrade so quickly for a character that could have just been totally a write-off.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting, because I have two critiques of this episode, and one of them was Mysteria. Just the way she, like did her lines felt very, like, to me, felt very, like, forceful, and, like, there was parts of the speech that were very, like, robotic and kind of just getting them out. There were parts that were good, but it was like hard to disconnect those moments of acting. And then the other one is when we see that Dragonstone as this cool, enormous, like that jaunt, like that long, long road leading to it, where it's like, oh, we've seen Dragonstone before. And like, they never showed off this. It's just, you know, this is what happens when you're doing a prequel. And I like that we saw the castle, because we've never seen it from a distance. Like, we've seen that inside shot many times. And it's cool to see it, like, a little prettier and more maintained. But yeah, that long shot where it's like, all right, we get it. This island's, like, a bigger deal than it was, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I get the vibe, and I don't know any of the lore of this shit, but I get the vibe that it gets destroyed over time. And that's why it's not there in the future.
I get the vibe that it gets, like, it's not maintained for a while. Like, not that it necessarily gets destroyed, but it's like it's just not kept after for a long time. And that's why it kind of just ruins.
That's not the case, because eventually, well, like, people will take care of it going down, because this is the Targaryen's, like, first home in Westeros. And then when, what's his face? The usurper takes the Baratheons take over. Dragonstone is given to not Renly, his oldest brother.
Who? Oh gosh, I forget all these names.
Yeah,
there's no way.
Stannis.
Okay. Stannis, thank you.
Wow, holy shit!
Yeah,
that's
nicely
good.
Done. Yeah,
this guy's Stannis. Got COVID. Yeah.
So you have to imagine, like he's still maintaining it. It just, we're seeing, like, I guess another side of it that we had never seen, because we've seen people land in the beach, which we kind of saw, it looked like a similar beach, and then be in the house, but we just never saw the, like, 15-mile-long road and, like, the clouds leading up to it.
The long bridge?
We saw the bridge.
Daenerys and Jon on the bridge.
We saw them walking down, like, a cliffside, which might have been, like, the end of that. I don't remember a bridge 100%.
I definitely remember a bridge, flirting. And
it wasn't that long, right?
Especially in this sequence when we're kind of introduced to it, Tim. I'm like, hell yeah, put as much fog as you can, because, like, we don't got the budget to make this look real good. So let's just cover a shitload of it in fog right now.
I like the way it looked. I thought it looked really cool. Yeah.
I thought they put the fog just so the fucking dragon could fly through it. Yeah. They're like, the budget is, we have the budget to go fucking have a cool swoopy dragon. Let's go. I loved the line with the what's his name? Damon and Seahorse guy at the end when he says, I will speak of my brother as I wish. You will not.
Love that.
Fuck yeah, dude. That's so sick, man. Yeah. And as I was watching this episode, I was like, thinking about how much I fucking love Game of Thrones, how much they're nailing it. And like, it kept reminding me of like a lot of the good memories, especially because we see so many locations that we know, like the amount of just times we're like, oh fuck, I think that's the place from this or that's the place from that. And it's just like, it's satisfying. Right. Mm-hmm. But it just reminded me, like, God, Joffrey was a little fuck. You know what I mean? Like, Joffrey was, like, such a good bad guy. And I just love that, like, so far the show doesn't have a Joffrey, but I don't think it really needs one because we kind of have enough, like, interesting things going on. But I was thinking about Tyrion, where I was like, God, Tyrion was such an X factor to that original show. And, like, you know, there was that cast of the Master of Whispers and all that, where it's like, yeah. I wonder if this show is going to get there. And I'm not mad at it for not being here in episode two. That's okay. But I do wonder if we're going to get kind of a supporting cast that kind of adds different dimensions to this that aren't just the political side, but are also kind of like lines like the I'll speak of my brother as I wish, which is there's a little bit more flavor to it than the kind of just back and forth.
Yeah, because I do think that Tyrion and the bird who has birds, the Master Whispers. Yeah, Varys. There you go. I think Tyrion and Varys were kind of their a faction unto their own, and that is an element that I am missing, because it wasn't always just good and bad. There was definitely some moments of humor, and it always felt like the writing was so good and humorous at the same time, and they found a way to kind of be playful with it. And that is an element that I'm missing so far, because right now we're getting what we think is good and what we think is bad and what we think is like maybe in a bit of a gray area, but which side are they leaning towards and for what reason? But I'm still waiting for not comic relief, but maybe the side that is just kind of watching fun. All this like the audience is, you know?
Yeah.
The big thing I'm curious about is like, I feel like when it was revealed in Game of Thrones that Littlefinger had basically put everything in motion, to me, like, that was a huge moment. And it kind of has primed me for for things of, like, it's gotten my mind in that place where I'm like, all right.
Who's behind this?
Exactly. Like, who's behind this? Because, like, what? The Queen died.
I thought it was Otto. Based on episode one, I was like, Otto's going to be the Littlefinger here.
I also think it's Otto. But, like, do you guys think that, like, somebody like killed the queen?
Well, my thing is, so far it is Otto, right? Like, I feel like they're not even trying to hide that. Like, they're telling the camera it's Otto. Otto's playing the situation with his daughter and all of that stuff.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, do we think that Otto, like, not just playing the situation, also like plan and made moves to make things happen? Like, because
that's interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting, Kev, because who was it that declared that the child was in breach?
I think that was the maester.
It was the maester, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is interesting.
Collusion.
That, like, if, exactly. Yeah. You know? And, like, that would, you're bringing up an interesting point, Kev, of, like, thinking, how do we play the game while it tries to play us, you know?
Because Otto has also been the one that's keep pushing Daemon away. And we had that moment where Viserys is like, bro, you told me he's not good for this role. So we put him in this role. You told me he wasn't good. You know what I mean? So, like, he keeps trying to discredit him to, like, keep him from being the heir. And, like, it was him, right, that was like, maybe we should make your daughter the heir. I don't know.
Well, I
don't,
it's I also just an think, idea. I also just think that he's never really liked Daemon to begin with. And I think it'd be one thing if Daemon truly was, like, a good and decent person and all of these things were happening around Otto. And Otto was making all these suggestions, and all of what they showed of Daemon so far was like him to be a good guy and make right decisions. Because I think it'd be a bit more obvious then. But I think that when the showrunners have Daemon gather the gold cloaks together and fuck the whole city up and like all these criminals, and we're going to clean house, but really like in a kind of really evil and vile and corrupt sort of way, I don't think that. I think it gives the audience an understanding that, like, oh, Otto's doing this for a reason, because Daemon is clearly like an unhinged, not super balanced character. I think if they made it a bit more obvious that Daemon was a better person, then maybe I'd be thinking, ooh, maybe Otto's kind of just playing this. And you're right. You know, it is kind of messed up that Otto doesn't want Daemon working anywhere because he's such a good guy. Why wouldn't he? But he's not such a good guy. Like, I think we've seen reason to not trust him so far.
I mean, is there a chance that it is one of those things that's so fucking obvious that it couldn't actually be that Daemon is behind it all? did Daemon, is he the one colluding with the Maester or something, killing the wife and all that?
I don't like, I get the feeling that Daemon's like, hey man, God wants me to be king. That's why he can't have any heirs. You know what I mean? He kind of just believes that like things are going the way they're supposed to be going. And now that people are stepping in and being like the Seahorses being like, we got to make things happen. I think there's going to be a change. So I don't think that like at the start of this, he would have been motivated to do that. You know, I think Otto is the easy one. Is there any chance? No. Yeah, because like Rhaenyra becoming the princess, the heir, like that's unexpected. So who pushed for that? Was that Otto or?
I imagine that was just Viserys, right? Like that was a dad decision, and now just everyone has to deal with it around it. Like that's the X factor to it. But the one person we haven't talked about the entire episode that is clearly going to be a big deal in this show is the Dorne guy, Jonathan Dornbush.
Oh, Cole.
Dornbush, yeah.
Yeah.
Vincent Cole. Cole. Right?
Kristen.
Kristen. Yeah,
yeah, they thought his name was Crispin. So and he was like, maybe you remember the time I knocked you off your horse, bitch.
Love that. Yeah, fucking love that. But he's clearly going to be a big factor in this in some way. I don't know whether he ends up being with Rhaenyra or just is like kind of a factor in other ways. But I did like that he was knighted by the Dondarrion, which is the dude with the eye patch that would like Beric Dondarrion would bring himself, the guy with the dark magic that would like bring people back from the dead or whatever. His relative. Like, knighted,
Robin Hood, Christian. The Robin Hood Club.
Yeah, the Robin Hood Club.
Right? I mean, it was Robin Hood.
You're right.
Yeah. But what do you think, what's going to happen with him?
I couldn't even say right now. I think he's a romantic interest, and I do think that he will sort of, you know, maybe we find out he is related to somebody closer after all. That's why he was kind of being pushed to be like, I don't know. I think it's so confusing because there were so many other people that she could have chosen, but she chose him. And yeah, it's because he has battle experience or whatever. But it also just seemed like there was a little bit of flirtation between them at that tournament. I couldn't even speculate right now as to why he's there and what role he's going to play. But I do think that he will become somewhat of a romantic interest to Rhaenyra.
Yeah, I definitely think he'll become a romantic interest and like that's going to be important. He's from Dorne, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I think that it is possible that like we might find out that like, a marriage there would be very strategic. Like remember Dorne is not part of this, the seven kingdoms. Yeah. Until way later in this timeline. So like, I think that like uniting that house might be something that they're interested in. Although I guess we would know already. But I do think that he's going to be a pivotal character. That's just going to be like her, like second or her number one bodyguard essentially. And close by, always. So I think it's a character we're gonna see a lot of.
He's gonna become like the sexy old man.
What was his name? Oh wait, no,
Jorah
Mormont. Yeah.
No, who was the other guy, the sexy guy that ended up getting a new actor?
Dondarrion.
Yeah, Dondarrion, something like that.
That's this fucking show, man.
Everyone's the same. Well, they got four names, Tim.
But wait, really? What the hell?
Yeah, Beric Dondarrion. No, never mind. Beric Dondarrion was a Robin Hood guy with the eye patch.
He's the guy his family knighted Kristen.
Dario Naharis.
Dario, yes.
Dario Naharis, yeah. He's the one who was like in season one. He was the bad guy from Deadpool 1, the movie.
Yes.
Remember that guy, recast. Kevin?
Yeah. That's right.
And then he got recast into this other dude with the dark hair.
I didn't like as much.
Too sexy, man.
Yeah.
Too sexy, baby. Well, let us know in the comments below which sexy man you preferred. And what you're thinking, what are your theories? How right or wrong do you think we are about all the various things that we said on this episode? Various, Viserys, who the hell knows?
We'll be back. I do hint that there's a lot of lore out there right now because, like,
I know. Yeah, be careful. Yeah. Stay out of that shit. Don't do it. But anyways, we'll be back next week with more Game of Thrones Hot D. And later this week, Andy Cortez will be hosting Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power with Elise Willems and Lucy James. That is extremely exciting. Somewhere sandwiched in between there, we're doing a little She-Hulk. So check that out, She-Hulk episode 3. But until next week, I love you all. Goodbye.